Here we go. That's okay. Thanks to everyone for joining us. I'm going to leave the call open for just a second now while I introduce everyone to the call. I know we have a few new folks tonight, which we're always really excited to have, and hopefully all of the regulars provide some encouragement that it's worth calling back again and again and again. We have been doing this for what we just decided, or I just decided, was 43 straight months until someone corrects me. I met Maria Johnson and Jessica Loomer, I'll introduce them in just a sec, back at an LHON conference in Pittsburgh in 2014, and the three of us realized how awesome of an opportunity it is to be around other people with the same condition who share a very, very similar experience and to benefit from sharing stories and just the bond and the connection and the community that we're able to share immediately with those people, that how often it is very difficult to relate to others and how quickly it is, how quickly we're able to establish connections with other people. And we thought, how great would it be if we're able to take what we learned from the in-person conference experience and kind of stretch it throughout the entire year. So while we certainly encourage you all to go to the conference every year, we like to treat this call as a taste of the conference, if you will, a very small taste, albeit a great one at the same time. So with that, I'd love to introduce to the other co-host, Maria Johnson, here with us.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Maria.
And Jessica Loomer is here as well.
Hi, guys.
They both, as you notice, probably have a slightly more chipper tone than I do, given their time difference out on the West Coast. But I'm going to do my best and be really excited for you tonight because we actually have an awesome, awesome, awesome speaker. I just met Lance very recently, but I will get to that later on. The reason for these calls, as I said, is to kind of stretch that community along, but we also like to introduce everyone to new people every month. So we try to have a speaker who shares a bit of his or her story, answers questions, provides tips and tricks for everyone. And we're really excited to share different perspectives. We've had people who actually have LHON. We've had family members. We've had significant others. We've had children, spanning the full gamut. These calls really are for everyone, both from a speaker perspective and from a listener perspective. So we encourage all of you to share the news and get people here every month. While we talk about all of those things and share advice, there are a few topics we try and steer away from just because we're not experts. Those tend to be any kind of legal or employment advice. We're not perfect at that, although we can provide a little guidance or at least point you in the right directions of people to talk to. Any real medical advice, obviously there's tons of new medical growth and progression every year, different types of research. While we may talk about things that are happening, we do not take the opportunity within this call to provide advantages or advice for certain treatments and those types of things, just because we certainly think it's better for doctors to be giving that kind of advice. So with that, I will go ahead and mute the rest of the call so I can introduce everyone to our speaker this evening. I'm going to mute it now, and Lance, I think you know how to unmute, but take your time.
The conference has been muted.
All right, so while we get ready for our speaker, I'll give you a little bit of background on him. I, as I said, just met him this week, actually, on a personal level. And the thing that struck me repeatedly throughout the conversation I had with him, getting to know him, is just how many rocks there are to overturn into how awesome and cool his story is from the beginning until now. And his story is not a long one. He does have LHON and actually was diagnosed a little over 2 years ago, but has done some awesome things both before and after that. So with that, I will introduce you all to Lance. Are you there, Lance? He may still be trying to unmute, and that's okay. Star 7 is how you unmute if you would like to give it a try, Lance, and we can continue. But we're excited to kind of share some of Lance's story with everybody. He, as I said, was diagnosed a couple years ago, and he's one of the two people we have calling from Indiana today. Or at least that's where he lives now. He lived in Texas before that. I'll give him a second to see if he can. In case no one can hear me, I'm going to go ahead and unmute everyone at this point as well.
The conference has been unmuted.
Sorry about that, Andy.
Lance, that's not a problem. Because I'm going to have it unmuted for everyone now, if you know you're going to be in a very loud area, just press either the mute button on your phone or press *6 on whatever you happen to be using. But we don't hear lots of background noise right now. I know we had some during the beginning of the call, but it's I'm happy to leave the call open. It's easier for everyone, in fact. Are you there, Lance?
I am.
Fantastic. So we'll start a little bit at the beginning of your story, and I know it actually will start probably before your vision loss, but if you don't mind giving us a little bit of who you were, say, 4 years ago. Where were you? What were you doing for work? What were you doing outside of work for fun?
Let me take an opportunity before I forget about it to thank you and Jessica and Maria and Melissa, anybody else who may be responsible for getting this call started and keeping it together. I'm really appreciative of y'all, and I've gotten a lot out of it, so I just wanted to throw that in there before I forgot about it later. Many thanks. And certainly offer a blanket disclaimer that would leave you not guilty of anything I say this evening. I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana, fairly, not a textbook upbringing, but nothing too out of the ordinary. I got into photography at a pretty early age, worked in a dark room, before I was out of high school. It was pretty apparent I was going to follow that path. In 92, I moved down to Texas following work and, tried to kind of grow my craft down there and really came of age with my photography down there and got out and, became a much better landscape photographer, which was my passion until I, couldn't do it anymore. So I was a director of photography and a photographer in the Houston area in Texas for a long time. My career took a pretty serious dogleg in 2007. I was doing freelance work. I had been doing freelance work on my own for about 4 years, and I met a boat captain in the town of Conroe where I was living, and he was a captain on an offshore tug and barge unit, and I helped him build something at his house, and he asked me if I want more work offshore, and I said, well, I probably should, get a job or something, and so I did the things he suggested and got a Coast Guard license, and the company he was working for hired me. They put me on a plane and flew me to Tampa, and I went to sea and did that for 8 years. So I was on the boat in the summer of 2015. It was June or July, and I had an office out on the barge. I was a tankerman, so I was in charge of this seagoing barge, which we haul a lot of crude oil, like 90,000 barrels at a time. And I was in my office out there reading a book, and I just sensed that something wasn't quite right about my vision, and I wasn't really too conscious of it, really, to be honest. So I was reading a book, and I, for some reason, decided to cover up my left eye, and there was what appeared to me to be like a clear smudge in the middle of my vision on my right eye. There was no text behind it. It wasn't there. It wasn't dark. It was just a smudge. And it was a bit disturbing, but I wasn't too worried about it. I figured I'd gotten something in my eye. We, you know, worked with a lot of nasty stuff sometimes. And it just slowly became more and more noticeable, and we did 30 days at a time on the barge, and so I got off and went to the folks that did my LASIK surgery in 05, and they could not find anything wrong with me. They referred me to a retinal specialist, and they could not find anything wrong either. The guy said, well, why don't you come back in a month? Maybe it'll go away. And so I went back on the boat for another month, and it just continued to deteriorate. I did go to an eye surgeon who did my parents' cataract surgery. He could not find anything wrong, you know. He ordered an MRI because I'd had a concussion in September of 14, and there was evidence of that, but nothing else. And he referred me to a neuro ophthalmologist in the medical center in Houston, Dr. Andrew Lee, and he initially was not sure. I think he suspected something. And he thought it may have been due to the trauma, and that it may go away. I got back on the boat again, and my last trip on the boat in December of 2015, I think it was only about a week before I was due to get off the boat, I noticed my left eye was getting bad as well. I couldn't focus on anything. We were anchored in the Mississippi River, and I can remember these things clearly. I was looking at this ship with all its lights on at dusk, and nothing was clear about it. The moon was out, it was blurry, and I became worried at that point, a little bit anyway. And so I was due to get off the boat and drive home to Houston with a rental car. And I went back to the wheelhouse, and I said, hey, Cap, there's still a chance I can get a flight. I didn't feel good about driving home, and he did that. And, you know, when I got off the boat and got in the car to drive to the airport, I mean, all the signs were blurry. And when I got in the airport, people's faces were not very clear. I could barely really make out their features, and it was unsettling, to say the least. I'd already made another appointment with Andrew Lee, and so it was just two or three days after that I went to see him, and he told me that he thought he knew what I had, and LHON was what he thought I had, and gave me the rundown on the condition and what I was looking at, and I mean, I knew. It sounded like I was looking at blindness, and there was no cure for it. So,
I mean, when was that? Just to get a sense of the timeline, that was January,
It was in late December, just less than a week before Christmas.
Okay.
2015.
So that hit you like a ton of bricks. And that was the last time you were on the ship, right, then?
It was.
Okay.
I got off the boat on December 17th.
And I know you've, I mean, it's crazy for me to think. That's 2016. As I said at the beginning of this call, I met the other two hosts, this call in 2014, halfway through the year that summer, which is crazy. Only a year and a half after that is when you were coming to terms with your diagnosis. And I'd love to talk about some of the things you've done since then. I know early on you met different people and kind of developed a support system. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, one of the biggest people in my support system is my sister. She's just 2 or 3 years younger than me, and she's a lifelong social worker. She's been awesome, and I couldn't say enough about this woman. She lives in Austin, Texas, and when she found out what was going on with me, she immediately got online and started, researching what this condition was, and we made an appointment with Dr. Sadoun and, made flight reservations. We were going to go out there together, and we did. But she also knew or had worked with a friend of hers that had worked for the Division of Blind Services in the Central Texas area for, 25 or 30 years, a man named Donnie Sims, a man that has become a friend and an incredible advocate. He hooked me up with a lot of services in the Austin area in Texas, Hadley Institute. If I was going to go blind, if anybody could say this, in a decent position to do so.
No, I mean, and you got plugged into some programs there, but how quickly were you plugged into those programs, and what kinds of services did you get from the folks there in the Austin area?
In January, the same month, I would say, I had no problem saying I had gone blind right at the first part of the year. I couldn't see much. My sister suggested that I get involved in the department with the what was called DARS at the time, Department of Rehabilitation Services. And so I got involved with them, and ultimately that led to a caseworker coming out and putting a book, a big binder that was the method for me to start learning Braille. And she showed up probably in late February or early March, and by this time I was living alone in a semi-rural area on 6 acres, and there's this book and dots. I'm like, okay, dots. I guess this is what I'm supposed to do right now. So that was the start of that for me. And then Donnie Sims, the man I mentioned, he told me about a place called the Chris Cole Center in Austin, and that was going to come later. But there are a rehab facility where you go and live there. It's in central Austin. And I did end up there for about 6 months, but that didn't happen until about a year later.
I have a question, if you don't mind. I always wonder if you could mention how much you see, because I found that, this is Jim McCoy speaking, that there are some people who have LHN, and they say, well, they can see a computer, they make the fonts real big, and they use it, and they get real close to it, and they have a big screen. That's, some people have that. Some people sit there and say, they can't see the screen at all. It's like, no, there's nothing. Whereas I'm in between, I have Zoom text, I have about 10x. So there's no font that's going to be big enough on a computer screen. I have to use Zoom text. But I've met one person, and they said they can't even use Zoom text. That's not even an option for them. So it's like it runs the scale. You mentioned you were blind, but I mean, like, I wouldn't use a white cane as much. I probably should. But so maybe you mentioned how, because I'm always interested how some people, it really varies from people, you know what I mean, what the intensity they have it.
It does.
Yeah, look, go ahead, Lance, if you want to.
It does. Yeah,
was someone answering there?
That was me. That was Lance. It does seem to vary greatly, and it's interesting to me, but, I mean, my case is certainly, you know, different from other people's. For me to say it's worse or better than anybody else's is maybe focusing on the differences, and I think it's important for us to focus on the similarities.
I'll go ahead and chime in here a little bit. I mean, and while we don't say it explicitly, there are people in this group who have very different levels of vision. As you mentioned, I think it was Jim who was talking. There are people who learn to drive again. There are people who ride bike. There are people who see very, very little, if anything. I've met people in this community who see barely nothing, who have very little light perception, if that. And for that reason, while it's certainly obvious from some of the conversations we have, you can get a sense of what some people's vision is. And if anyone wants to answer that question for themselves, I'm happy with anyone answering that question. But I try not to force people to answer that question because it can be very, very isolating in terms of there are people who feel if we start talking about what we can and can't see, there are those who feel that this group must not be for them if they see a lot less or a lot more than what others in this group see. So I'm happy to let you answer as much as you want, Lance, but at the same time, I want to focus on the things that we do and the things that keep us very similar, like you said, Lance. So,
yeah, right. I mean, I will say no. I'm not able to use magnification. I was left with just light perception, light shadow perception.
So you were talking about what you were learning there, and you talked about the big binder, your Braille binder, if you will, and your 6 acres, and being left alone with that binder for a long time. Is that something you still do now? How much Braille have you learned? I know that's something that can be kind of intimidating for a lot of people thinking about learning to read a second time in their life while they have all these other things happening to them as well. How did you feel in front of that mountain, if you will?
Well, I mean, initially it seemed like the thing that I needed to do. I did read a lot. And I certainly had plenty of time. I ended up in a situation where I was living alone out there in a semi-rural area, so I had plenty of time to work on it. I really learned the Braille alphabet and how to write with a slate and a Braille writer with the Hadley Institute, which I couldn't say enough of. I think they're very quality. Just an amazing organization, and the people that I've, you know, talked to have been great. So I did their Braille Literacy 1 through 3 courses, which got me all the way through punctuation and, you know, the alphabet and writing Braille. Now, when I got to the Chris Cole Center in February of 17, I started working on the contracted code and learned the contracted code there, and I can tell you the whole process from the start to where I'm right now, it has had my gray matter doing push-ups. I'll tell you, man. It's been tough, but rewarding at the same time. I remember a moment I was at the Chris Cole Center, and I was given a children's book, and it was in the contracted Braille code. There was really nothing left to do at this point. I had memorized as much as I could. It was time to read. And I'm reading this children's book, and it was something like the dog chased the blue balloon. And I'm telling you, it was a humbling experience to realize where I was. And that I was able to, you know, I had the opportunity to learn to read twice in one lifetime. So it was a very, it was just a really, it was a moment. And I saw a documentary on Rachel Carson in early 2017. You know, considered by a lot of people to be the, one of the first environmentalists. She was pretty instrumental in getting BBC banned. And her book was, her swan song was the book titled Silent Spring. And I said right then, that is the first book I'm going to read in Braille. And I had not started learning the contracted code yet. So I started reading that book in the early summer of 17. So that was the first book I read. I've read a couple others. I'm on my fourth book now, one that I probably should have never picked up, Great Expectations. Yeah, that was somebody suggested. My father said, "Why, have you ever read any Dickens?" And I said, "No, I'll get that one." And man, it's been a long road to hoe, that one. It's
not the shortest Dickens book either.
No, it's I'm kicking myself for that decision, but it's not completely enjoyment at this point. I'll be honest with you, I'm still trying to get faster, and it is a exercise.
Do you find yourself getting faster?
Absolutely. When I first started reading, you know, Silent Spring, it would take me up to 45 minutes to read one page, which was, I did not enjoy opening a book at that time. But now I can read in 10 minutes or less a page, which is still very slow. But I do enjoy opening a book now.
And when you say a page, is that pretty similar to what we all think of as a page for a sighted reader, or is it shorter or longer? Or
it's not exactly the same as a printed page. I don't know if it's slightly more, slightly less, but it's pretty close.
Okay.
I don't mind audio books, and I still listen to audio magazines, but there was something missing, and I did feel a pretty strong need to still engage myself in literature, a piece of literature. And I mean, long term, I don't know what it means. I don't know if I'm going to be able to dedicate the amount of time I'm dedicating now to Braille, but it's just been a very freeing experience for me.
Well, it sounds like you're on the way up in terms of Braille, and I mean, I don't think if at some point in time you have to do less of it due to other, like, lifestyle obligations, that you will start falling back. It seems like something that you'll continue to steadily get to do faster and faster, and I'm really excited for you to join again and give us your book report on Great Expectations whenever that happens. It would take me a long time to listen to the book, so don't worry.
I'm almost done.
You are? How close are you? Are you in the last volume?
I'm almost done with volume four, so it's five volumes, so I'm getting there.
Okay. Very exciting. Well, if I knew anything about the plot, now is where I would insert a nice little joke about the Great Expectations plot. But let's see. I know you learned a lot of things there once you went to the Chris Cole Center there in Austin, and you started learning about technology and those types of things, and you started to even do other hobbies outside of work. You mentioned photography and stepping away from photography, but have other hobbies outside of reading replaced some of that, and which hobbies that existed in your life before have you hung on to?
I've always enjoyed bicycling as probably a primary form of exercise. I rode, I bought a bike, and I did a lot of bicycling, but I bought a new bike in June of 07. I rode that one 22,000 miles until the time I stopped riding in February of 16. Shouldn't have been riding then. Rode for about 6 weeks longer than I should have. I ran into a construction trailer, and that was kind of the end of that. But I don't ride a bike on the streets anymore. I would I would be injured a lot. I've heard of people doing that, but no, I've got it mounted on a trainer, and I do pedal it about an hour every other day, which is a good workout. Do a lot of push-ups.
There you go.
I love hiking. You know, as a landscape photographer, I spent a lot of time in the national parks. I traveled extensively all over the United States, out west. Spent a lot of time in the backcountry, wilderness areas. I love hiking, backpacking. I still do it. I don't do it as much as I'd like to. Go ahead, Andy.
I'm just going to take the opportunity, because you mentioned the words national and park next to each other, to give a plug to the U.S. National Parks. I don't know if everyone knows this, but as a legally blind individual, you get a lifetime free pass, free membership to U.S. National Parks. So if you go to any of their offices, you can bring basically, I mean, in my experience, any form of identification that identifies you as a legally blind individual, and you can sign the back of a card, and that card grants you free access to all national parks for the rest of your life. So that's a great service that some people know about and others don't. So for anyone else
Thank
who
you.
Likes hiking as much as Lance does, or half as much as Lance does, it's a good thing to check out. So
I was in Yellowstone. The first time I went into the backcountry was in the National Forest near my home, the Sam Houston National Forest, and spent a couple nights out there. But in September of 16, me and a buddy went out to Yellowstone for 2 weeks, and that was the first major camping trip I did. And, yeah, there was we were paying for a campsite, and they got the little place kiosk where you fill out the form and everything, and he was filling out the form, and there was something about an access pass number, and he went to the campground host and was wondering if he was asking questions about that, and because we had to buy a year-long pass since we were going to be there for 2 weeks, it was the most economical way to do it, and it was, you know, I think $50 or $75 to get in that park. And he said, "Well, that's this thing you get if you're disabled." And he said, "You mean like blind?" And so the guy said, "Yeah." So we went up to the ranger station. Yeah, I didn't have to present anything. They just gave me a pass, and I have one of those, and they refunded it to $75.
Exactly, and you get access to yourself and anyone else in your car, or I think it's. If you walk to a park by foot, it's you and two or three other people. I'm not sure, but it's certainly worth it. And I just noticed that Lisa already posted to our Facebook group. So if anyone is interested, if you find our logo, the LHON Live logo, there's a comment on that post with more information.
Absolutely. It not only gets you into the national park free, it will discount camping, I think, by 50%, and not only the camping at national parks, but almost any federal area, Bureau of Land Management, but national grasslands, national forests, all kinds of places like that. So it saved me a lot of money.
So do you do all the camping stuff now yourself as well? I mean, is that something – are you able to pitch a tent these days?
Yeah, I pitch my own tent, and it took me a while. It's not a graceful thing, but I do it every time. It's funny, that trip to Yellowstone, about 10 days into the month, about halfway through our trip, it snowed on us 6 inches, and I mean, it was heavy, wet snow, and it just collapsed my tent. I had a dome tent just piled right up on it, and so I had to fix that, you know, and my buddy, he knew I had to do this, you know, and he's just standing there. He knew I would ask for help if I needed it, but it can be a challenge, and, you know, backpacking, even with a sighted person when you're blind, is not easy. I have done a solo hike and it was not necessarily pretty, although I made it to where I was headed. We did 15 nights of camping back in August during the solar eclipse. So we were in Kansas and Nebraska, South Dakota, Wyoming, Colorado. It was a great trip. And there's a place in Kansas called the Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve. And this place was, somebody told me about it because an orientation mobility instructor has mapped out a lot of the trails. And when you go there, they will give you a GPS unit, which gives you a lot of interpretive information as you hike. So my plan was to find a, say, 1 to 3 mile long trail, hike it one day out and back. My friend would describe to me some of the features. The GPS, by the way, was not a navigational tool. It was not that, but it was just a mowed path through the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we hiked it. It was about 3 miles. And so the next morning he dropped me off at one end. I had the other end of the trail where he was going to park pegged on my GPS. And so I started out, and about 45 minutes later, I do believe I was back where I started. I don't know how that happened, but the smart thing to do would have been to call him. Of course, I did not do that. So I decided to go cross country, and it wasn't very long before I came across a barbed wire fence, and that was where I was supposed to go. And at least the phone was telling me that, you know, it was giving me clock face directions. And I followed that fence for a while, and I heard some kids playing. It was like some farm or ranch land or something, and I got close to them, and it was a couple little girls, and I was at a low point, and I thought I wasn't going to be able to do it. And I said, I might need some help, and I'm blind, and I'm out here trying to hike, and they just ran away. And I followed that fence for about another few hundred yards, and I just crawled underneath it, and then I was back on track. Luckily, there was nothing in that pasture that was too aggressive, but I made it. But I'll tell you, it was one of the most difficult things I've ever done. It was tough, just not knowing what's ahead of you and creek banks and holes. But, you know, what I learned was don't take it lightly. You know, there is a man that backpacks solo that's blind. I think his name is Trevor Thomas. I spoke to him, and he's a mutant. He's an amazing guy, but he does long distance backpacking alone. He described how he does it, but I don't fully understand it yet. He's just, he loves to be in the backcountry, and there was one thing he said to me that was kind of all I needed to hear, you know, if I ever choose to do that, was he said, the only time I ever feel like I have any control, I'm in control, is when I'm in the backcountry, which is, you know, what the opposite of what any other blind individual would say, I'm quite sure, so...
How did you meet him?
When I was at Chris Cole, I had an orientation mobility instructor. Her name is Charlotte Simpson, and she was very helpful and willing to try to get me back on the trail to hike again. And we found out about this guy, and she set up a conference call with him. And I got to ask him a number of questions, you know, how do you choose a backcountry campsite, you know, how do you do all these things, and he compiles information with a sighted person about using guidebooks and maps, and even talking to authors of guidebooks, and makes extensive notes and uses them on the trail with a phone.
Yeah. That's impressive. So no shortage of hobbies. One other thing you shared last night, which I thought was really, really cool, is the few times you've been on stage since losing your vision. Can you talk about what brought you on stage and your other really cool hobby, in my opinion?
Oh, I love blues music, and I've kind of noodled around with it for quite some time. My dad was a jazz drummer, and but I just latched onto the blues, so I started playing harmonica about 30 years ago, and I enjoy it quite a bit. I had sat in with a lot of bands in Houston from time to time. I was not a regular member of a band or anything like that, but just whenever the opportunity arose, I would do that. So when I was out in Austin, obviously, it's an awesome city for music, billed as a live music capital of the world, and it is a great place to hear some music. They've got a lot of famous venues, and I had the opportunity to play with a band at the Continental Club, and another place in town, got to play with another band, and to get up there. I didn't have to see how many people were in the room. It was packed. I heard, but it was interesting to go up there blind. And I still play whenever I can. It's a release, and music has always moved me. It's one of the things that still makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. I'm really glad to have that in my life, but I don't focus on it as much anymore. I'm definitely got my hands full with all this training and technology and stuff. I still get the harmonica out almost every day. Probably annoy whoever's close.
That's awesome. I think that's the coolest thing. I mean, what a cool instrument anyway, but in the way that you do it, I think it's just really, really cool. And I think we all realize how cool it would be to play on a stage in Austin, of all places. I know I could sit here and talk to you and ask everyone to listen for another hour, but I'm not going to be selfish and do that. At this point, I will go ahead. It is about 8:45, a touch after that, here on the East Coast. So before it gets to the end of the hour, I do want to kind of open the call up and allow others to ask you questions if they have questions or comments for you or any of us. Now is an opportunity for others to ask questions. Before we get there, I'm going to take a step back and ask you, Lance, do you have any last things you'd like to share with everyone here on the call?
Nothing specific about the nuts and bolts of this. I will say that I have found this portion of my life to not be a completely negative thing. It has been daunting and trying, but at the same time, I have realized some benefits from this thing. The friendships and relationships I have been able to
hello.
Sometimes, friends and family, I've been able to get close to people I've met. It's just been amazing. I don't judge people by what they look like anymore. And I found that to be very, it's such a pure thing. And it's enabled me to become a little bit more diligent and patient. And there's many other things that I can't always verbalize what this thing means, but it has shored up my life in a lot of ways. There are a lot of things I can't do, but there are a lot of things, and these are things I deem to be very important in my life that I've gotten a lot more confident in, and it has helped me to reconnect with the human race a little bit. I oftentimes self-centered, negative, you know. And I'm not so much like that anymore, and I don't understand all of that. I'm happy, possibly happier than I've ever been, and I don't get it. But I'm just glad that that's where I am today, and I'm just happy to be moving forward. I got plenty to do. I'll tell you what, going blind will, I got a new job.
I would like to just mention two things. Just one, a comment and a question. First, I truly appreciate you sharing today. It's been very refreshing. Many people hit this stump, like all of us have. And many people, woe is me, and they take it one term. You've taken it to a positive turn, and that's very refreshing to hear. My question is, do you have a dog or a pet? Even not necessarily a stinky dog, but just a regular dog or a pet animal. Do you have on the farm? Do you have a dog or anything?
I don't.
Are you a cat person?
I do not.
Are you a cat person?
I don't have a service animal. All I have is a python. I've had it for 23 years.
They don't do good fetching the paper, do they?
No, I don't recommend. They probably. I've never heard of a guide python, but there's always somewhere to go.
Lance, I got a question for you. I've been taking a look at your amazing, powerful, dramatic photography on National Geo website. Would it be okay with you if I put that link on our Facebook group? Because it's amazing, and I'd love for people to see it if I have your permission to share it.
Absolutely. I still get to show off every now and again. Thank you. Thanks for saying those things. It was absolutely what I was best at on this planet, and I appreciate you saying that.
I'm glad you're going to share. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, this is Cindy. I'm glad Lissa brought up about sharing your photography. I was really interested in taking a look at that. I own an art gallery that's 48 years old, and I've just been diagnosed like early December, and so I'm going through a lot of stuff too, but I'm interested in seeing your photography. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, check it out. That's certainly a long time for a gallery to be operating, and I'm interested. I would hope to talk to you more about that and how you've been able to keep that thing running for that long. That's awesome.
Yeah, my parents started it, but we have a photographer who hikes all out in the beautiful state of Arkansas, and we represent his work in our gallery, and so I'm looking forward to checking out your landscape photography.
So would that be Tim Ernst?
We love Tim Ernst, but no, that's not who we have in our gallery. Another guy named Paul Caldwell, and his website is Photos of Arkansas.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with him, but Tim's work is fabulous. I was just very impressed by his stuff.
The first national river in the country is in Arkansas. It's the Buffalo National River, and Paul Caldwell's father was on the committee that helped make that happen about 50-something years ago.
I have spent a lot of time in the backcountry in Arkansas, and I know the Buffalo River pretty well.
Yeah, great.
But I look forward to talking to you further about that stuff. I love Arkansas. Sure do.
All right. Nice to meet you.
You too.
Lance, this is Lisa from Canada. I want to say welcome.
Hey, Lisa. Thank you, Lisa.
Your story is very inspiring to be hiking on your own. I give you a lot of credit to do that. Wow, that's very impressive. Can I ask how old you were affected at?
48.
48?
I suppose I was 47 when I first noticed something.
Yeah. Is there anybody else in your family, or were you the first?
My mother was adopted, so...
Okay.
The buck kind of stops there. My sister has a daughter and son, so I remain hopeful as far as research goes.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, we're in Canada. Where in Canada are you?
I'm in Winnipeg.
She's in frozen Canada.
I'm in frozen Canada. Just Winnipeg, Manitoba, right above North Dakota.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's, you're in the deep freeze there. It's not so warm here either. It's about, I don't know, it's probably in the teens here, but it's been cold.
Hi, my name is Bridget, and I'm in Tennessee. Do you use a cane?
I do. I don't go anywhere without it.
How did you get comfortable using your cane, if you don't mind asking?
Well, I first got one before I ever had any vocational rehab. It was a loaner, and I was going to get some training, and I told the potential trainer that I was going to go to Indiana for a month in July of 2016, and he brought me this loaner and showed me a couple things on my parents' sidewalk. I took it to Indiana and went to the Indy 500 and that was a little after that, but no, I was started walking with it. Taught myself what I could, but then I had formal training in at the Chris Cole Center in Austin, Texas, and they're in central Austin, so it's just, there's plenty of city travel right outside the door, and I still don't necessarily enjoy walking around blind in the city, but it's definitely doable and not terribly dangerous.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Does the cane get any better as you go along?
Yeah, it's, the cane is, I mean, cane travel to me is the root of, I don't use a cane so much when, if I'm hiking, and this may be a little off the subject about what you're talking about, but just to let everybody know, if I'm in the backcountry in rocky terrain, I do not use a cane. I use trekking poles, but in the city, there's no substitute for just practice. And I'm still on the cusp of a lot of this stuff. I'm not any sort of a veteran at all, so it's not, it's daunting. It's not easy, and it continues to be a real challenge even to learn some fairly simple routes in my own neighborhood, walking to the bank or, some businesses that are close by. It's it really takes every bit of concentration that I have. It can take a lot out of you.
I'm saying.
I really encourage you to exploit, use the cane and get as good as you can with it. It's a little slice of freedom and help you get around.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Lance, this is Gary, and I'm in Marion, Indiana. Where are you located at?
I'm in Irvington, in Indianapolis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Take a cane with me a lot. I don't use it very often. The part of the time when I do take it, I guess I take it more for one, either to find steps and, rough sidewalks or this kind of stuff. So other people know I'm kind of visually impaired, not just flat stupid. So
another thing about the cane is I want people to know I'm blind when I'm out walking around. It's not that I want to wear it like a crown, but at the same time, it's a safety thing. That cane, I could part the Red Sea with that thing. I like people to know that I'm blind if I'm crossing the street. I'm not shy about waving that thing around a little bit. And, I encourage you to try to get better with it. It's been my companion, that thing. It's beat up looking, I'll tell you.
Yeah, I don't get out into the towns. I'm kind of like you are, I'm kind of in more of a rural setting. I don't have transportation to town, so I don't go through the city streets, bike traffic lights, all that stuff. So.
Yeah, I was, down there in the rural area, but I'm here in the city now, and I moved up here to Indianapolis about 6 months ago. Moved in here permanently.
Hi, Lance. This is Ida from Canada as well. I have a question. Do you live alone?
No, I live with my significant other, Tanya,
okay.
Who is awesome.
And
I am very important for her in my life, that's for sure. She's listening.
Okay. So she helps you with things like your paperwork and being able to read the bills, et cetera, et cetera?
She does. I have a KNFB reader and Seeing AI, those apps on my phone, which do enable me to read things if I choose, but it's quite frankly much easier sometimes to just have her open the mail and read it real quick.
Right.
But it's nice to know that you can. And we work together.
Right.
Try to split what chores we can. I'm afraid she still has the lion's share of some of it, but we share some of the cooking duties. We do things like that. We she does most of it, although I will help with prep and cutting up ingredients and things like that whenever possible.
Right. Well, that's okay. So your mode of transportation now, I gather, is either driving with her or taking local buses or walking?
Yes, I can walk to a number of businesses around here, places to eat. There's a pharmacy around here and places like that, my bank. But she drives, and I have close to the bus route. It's a half mile to a bus, and it takes me to the transit center in downtown Indianapolis, which I can connect with any bus that takes me to any other part of the city. I haven't really exploited those yet, although I have ridden them in my training. I'm in another rehab program now here in Indianapolis, just squeezing as much out of this as I can. And they also have a service called Open Door, and for $3.50 each way, they will come pick you up, although you have to arrange it days in advance. And
right.
They go pick up other people, and they leave themselves a pretty hefty window of time when they will pick you up and drop you off and things.
We have that here as well.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a little frustrating at times, but it's nice that it's there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a way. There's always a way.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be at least...
Lance, this is Chris in Wisconsin. I've just got a question for you. You were familiar with Indianapolis from being a sighted person prior to losing your vision, so your ability to get around is somewhat easier based on that, I'm assuming?
A little bit. I moved away from here in 92, so I've been gone for 25 years, essentially. I know the city's laid out in essentially in a standard grid-like way. There are some streets that don't run that way, but run at odd angles. But what I did know about the city, I didn't grow up in this part of town, and what I did know about the city doesn't help me a whole lot. I just had to relearn most everything.
Okay, we did just cross over the hour mark, and I want to be respectful of everyone's time. So I want to remind everyone that if you have to go, that is certainly allowed, and we really appreciate you joining us. I'm just looking up next month's call as I try and talk and listen to, in my left ear at the same time. We have a call, as I said, every month, the first Wednesday of every month. So next month it will be March 7th. So again, the 7th of the month, just like this month. And they are always at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific here in the United States. Anyone who would like to be a speaker, regardless of what your story is, regardless of how you became involved in the LHON community, or what makes you interested in this community, we'd certainly love to have you reach out and sign up to share some of your story, or even if you just want to talk for a few minutes or have a little something you'd like to share. We have people reach out from time to time, and we're always really excited to hear from anyone and everyone. You can certainly find all of us on Facebook. My name's Andy Marks, and the others are Maria Johnson and Jessica Loomer. Lissa Poincineau is the one who obviously helps rally this group together in lots of ways. And if you happen to already have her contact information, she could put you in touch with any of us, or you can email us. We have a fancy Gmail account at lhonlive@gmail.com if you prefer email. So you can always reach out to us through any of those channels. I'd just like to give that plug before we get to the top of the hour as we start to see a few people get back to their lives. But as always, thanks for joining us, and we really appreciate it. But back to questions, and I don't want to hear because I'm learning a lot over here.
I have a question for you, Andy.
Yes.
Last night when I was reading that short passage out of the book, you somehow – I've been – puzzled about this ever since. You did some sort of search and looked at, how did you do that?
Yes, so I have my cell phone at all times when I am in my apartment, like I am now. It's attached to one of many Bluetooth keyboards I keep around the house. So if I go to it and open up Safari just through VoiceOver, I can start typing on that keyboard immediately, and it's Googling something for me. So as you talked, I was typing. And for others who are listening, when Lance was talking about Great Expectations last night, I was just amazed at the idea of him reading a book like that. So I wanted to understand the pace at which he read and kind of put him on the spot to read a little bit. And as he read, we're trying to learn what the passage was talking about. So I actually just put it in quotation marks, so it would actually look for that those exact words in that exact order, and Googled the words in that order. And because I probably put a couple sentences worth, it found it within Google, because those words don't come in that order very often, other than in the novel Great Expectations.
That's amazing, the technology that's available today. Yeah, I've been puzzled, kind of wondering about that today, and that's awesome.
Yeah, well, while I will type on my phone using touch typing occasionally, I much prefer having Bluetooth keyboards everywhere. I have them at home. I have them by the desk, so attached to just my cell phone. They're obviously, I mean, when I'm using a tablet, I'm doing the same kind of thing, but a lot of people don't think to attach Bluetooth keyboards to their cell phone, but I do everywhere. I sit on the train and text people with a keyboard in my lap.
Yeah, technology has never been my strong point, tonight being a good example of that. But anyway, it's good to have some work to do.
You're really, I mean, I'm super impressed with what you do with a camera, and I could never have done that. I haven't seen these pictures Liz was talking about, but I'm lucky if I get someone's head in a picture ever, and this isn't a new thing after I've lost my vision. This has been a thing always.
Well,
I noticed your laugh, Lisa. Thank you.
Okay. But you can cook now a little bit better.
I can make, you remember the last seafood I made was goldfish, and the last sandwich I made was a grilled cheese to pass my my class at home with my independent living skills. I made a grilled cheese myself. It was
That's a skill. Don't discount that. Grilled cheese is good.
For those who are not long time listeners, Lisa joined us for our November 2014 call right around Canadian Thanksgiving. And she shared fancy cooking tips that I can't believe it's been over 3 years and I still haven't done any of this.
I remember that call.
Yeah, I do too. And just for the record, even to this day, I still cannot flip a grilled cheese properly. So
I've never had a grilled cheese since.
Well, they make fancy flippers now that hold it on both sides.
I have yet to find them.
Double spatula, yeah, they're great.
I can cook everything else, bake everything else, but when it comes to grilled cheese, forget it.
All right, we're making grilled cheese at
the
conference this year.
You want to go to the Instapot range.
Yeah, I want to say someone talked about Instapots way back then. And I know
that was me.
They're the coolest
Jim
McCroy now.
Yeah, well, Jim was talking about his rice pan.
Your rice, the little cheese bits, the ham bits. Oh, man, I'm so hungry now.
And that was a call that was a long time ago. And I don't know if you all have been following the trends, but Instapots were sold out at Amazon this year for sighted people. They were that popular. So we just need to start more of those trends that go mainstream.
If I can be a part of
Instapot call.
If someone can make CCTVs mainstream, the price will probably come down. So someone do it.
Okay, so how much is Instapots on Amazon, if you might be asking?
Well, there's
a Bluetooth. What you want to get for us is the Bluetooth version, because then you can use your phone to set things. You can set the timer, set all the stuff, and see what it's at on your phone. So there's the Bluetooth version, but it's like $150, $180. It's not cheap.
So what can you cook on?
It's very similar to a crock pot, but
it's like a crock pot and a pressure cooker and a rice cooker. So if you take a rice cooker, a slow cooker, a crock pot, and a pressure cooker, it's all three in one.
Oh, for real? That's awesome.
Oh, man, it's so cool.
And for anyone who has a 500-square-foot apartment like me and could use fewer appliances, it's a great idea.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, a call that has run the gamut from hiking, the blues, and then grilled cheese. I mean, I don't know where you go from there. Andy trying to turn around in his apartment. Holy cow.
Yeah, exactly.
So who's coming to the conference?
I will be. It's 2 hours away from me.
This year, the conference is, let's say, correct me if I'm wrong, is it 28th and 29th?
27th,
28th.
28th.
No, 28th. Thursday the 28th. Thursday the 28th. Registration starts around 9:30. The welcome reception starts around 11 in the morning on the 28th. And it runs through noon on the 29th, Friday. And then we're working with the UMBF to make sure that their content will have stuff of interest Friday afternoon and Saturday. So, you can stay for the socializing, you can stay for the sessions, or you can, whatever. So we have the short version and the long version. Yep, and something tells me there are places where there's live music in Nashville as well. So if anyone wants to bring their harmonica, you're welcome to.
I got that. Thank you.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's always in my pocket. I carry it everywhere.
Lance, this is Lisa from Canada, and yeah, I always talk a lot, but sorry. Usually Wayne will promote the conference. I have to tell you, the very first time I went to a conference was the first time ever meeting anybody with LHON or, you know, carriers non-affected. And it is an experience, and I think, Cindy, if you're still on, somebody new to the line, it's an experience and an opportunity. If you can do it and afford to do it, it's priceless. It's you form such a bond, a family bond, a connection with these people that truly get what you go through 24/7. It's easy for somebody else to say, yeah, they understand, but until you're in those shoes, nobody really truly understands it. And I suggest to everybody, you know, if you can make the conference, it's something that's connected me to so many amazing people that it's changed my world and my way of looking at, you know, LHON.
Yeah. This Jeff, is Cindy. I'm still on, Jeff there? And I have the hotel booked for one night, so I'm coming.
Perfect.
Awesome. Who's coming with you, Cindy?
My mother is 78 years old, and she and I are either going to fly together or it's close enough for us to drive, maybe.
Okay.
Looking forward to
seeing you again.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Well, where do you live, Cindy?
Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay. I was wondering if the LHON Florida group got together without me, Wayne. I was very disappointed.
We went to Florida, I can't remember how many years ago, probably about 6 years ago, and made sure that we met Shelby and Susie and Wayne while we were there.
Okay.
Yes, at breakfast.
Yes.
Fantastic.
This is Chris in Pennsylvania, and I would just second what Lisa said, and I would just add the word, I found that I've made lifelong bonds with people. These friends I've made will be our lifelong friends that I've made.
Well said, Chris.
Yeah, I can remember meeting Chris for the first time. That was in 2015, and I walked over.
14,
I,
Wayne.
14?
Yeah.
14 was Pittsburgh. 15 was D.C.
Yeah.
No, 15 then.
15.
It was D.C.
Wayne wasn't at the 2014 one. If you were, he wasn't.
Oh.
Yep.
And I was walking over and just saw you or something. I don't remember exactly, but you just started talking to me. And you've been recently affected and stuff.
Yeah, but I'm going.
Putting a voice to a person is amazing. That's what I have to say to it. Is you hear people all the time. You see them on Facebook. This is Maria, by the way. You see them on Facebook, and then all of a sudden they're in person. And it just takes your friendship / bond to another level. I mean, it, as close to family as, you know, for not being family, honestly, that's what it's like.
I second that, Maria. When we met, it was amazing. After talking for so long.
It's the next step, you know. It's just you got to make the make it happen. And the conference is that one opportunity to make it happen. You never get that many affected in one place at one time. Never, except for the LHON conference. So if your budget allows, like everyone's been saying, your budget allows and you can make the time, it's so worth it. It really, really is.
It really is. Really
yeah,
is.
For sure.
I mean, you know, I can't afford the two nights, and then I jumped it up to three nights. Because I'm not going to miss the party.
Well, we're glad. We're glad to hear that.
I'm new to LHON, and last year, what was the conference at? I know this year it's going to be in Nashville, and I'm also in Tennessee. So I just want to know, what was the conference at last year, and what could be expected of the conference? Is anyone going to answer?
I'm going to answer the easy part of that question, and then let someone else answer the hard part. Last year it was in D.C. or the D.C. area. It's in D.C. every other year because it's actually connected to the UMDF conference they host every year, and every other year they host that conference in the D.C. area to allow what they call Day on the Hill, which is an opportunity to kind of lobby a representative to help support efforts for research for mitochondrial diseases like LHON. What you can expect at the conference is an opportunity to meet people like this, speakers on different facets of the LHON community. And, Lissa, I'll let you chime in here because you know more about this year.
What was – I missed part of it. Sorry, what was the question?
The question was, what can someone expect from the conference?
Ah, well, in terms of content, the best way to know, actually, is we videotape everything. So if you go to the LHON.org site, you'll see videos from all of the past conferences, and there you'll see that we cover a wide range of topics. So we always have a whole scientific, clinical, medical side so that we bring in experts and have people talking about the science of LHON. So we can talk to some of the researchers, clinicians, some of the companies that are doing clinical trials. So you get exposure to the science side of it. And then we try and have sessions about different aspects of living with LHON. So last year we had a couple folks talking about how to maintain employment or how to find a job if you've lost vision and you're trying to get back into the workforce. This year we're working towards a session on assistive technology. There's so much new in the world since we last really covered assistive technology. We want to look at apps and Amazon and Ira, you know, just a variety of assistive technology things that have been happening that would be of interest to folks. And then there's always just how to live with LHON, sort of like tonight's call was, where different people are talking about how have their lives been impacted, you know, whether it's a session on a focus item like sports and all the different ways people can and do sports with vision loss, ranging from individual, you know, athletics to team sports, or a session on just different people telling their stories, maybe in a condensed fashion like this. So we try and cover a range of topics so that you get sort of the human side, but the medical side, sort of all the different parts and pieces. Wrapped up into, you know, a full day's worth of stuff. And usually we pack it all into one day and go from morning till night, but that gets really overwhelming. So this year we're going to have sort of a casual, get acquainted couple of hours, then we'll have lunch, then we'll have sessions in the afternoon, then we can network in the evening, go out on the town, do whatever people want to do, get back in the morning, do a conversation about the science, the clinical trials, more sessions on LHON-focused stuff, and then breaks. So we try and design it so that it can be very low cost. If you want to just come in, spend one night, do one day, that's it, boom, you're done. If you can stay longer, we're working with the UMDF, who has a day and a half of sessions that will be on issues like Social Security disability insurance and genetics 101, things like that. So if you can stay for the full event, then you can get those things also. So it's a whole range of options, but all of it, all wrapped around what everyone was just what everyone was just saying, which is, yeah, the sessions are what they are and they're great, but what people really remember is what everyone was talking about earlier: the friendships they make, the connections, the, you know, tips and tricks from other people who are living similar issues in their lives.
Frankly, if you enjoyed these calls at all, is something you would benefit from, and that's the added piece that Liz is talking about.
Okay, thank you so much. I will be there since I'm only 2 hours away from there, from Nashville, so I will be there, and I'll be looking forward to meet someone else that has LHON, because I don't really know no one else knows here in my town that's blind. Also.
You said your name was Bridget, right?
Yeah.
Thank you so
much. Can I ask you what your last name is, Bridget?
Anderson.
And are you on the Facebook group?
I'm on Facebook, you said?
Yeah, are you in our LA Cohen Facebook group?
Yes, B. Anderson.
Oh, B. Okay, good. Got it. Super. Thanks. Now I got you covered.
This is Chris.
You just joined LHON to LHON last week.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
This is Chris in Wisconsin, and I've just got, how many people go to that conference a year?
Generally about 100 plus minus. In the big picture, it's a three-ring circus because the UMDF is running a conference, and they have a couple hundred researchers and clinicians from around the globe who are all having a four-day conference about mitochondrial disease and research about mitochondrial disease, clinical care. So that four-day conference is taking place in one big room, and they have exhibitors who are working on all issues related to mitochondrial disease. So that's one ring of the three-ring circus. Then there's another ring of the three-ring circus where there's a two-day conference going on with a couple hundred different people who are patients and families with a variety of mitochondrial diseases, people who have things like MELOS, Lay's disease, MRF, NARP, things you probably never heard of unless you've gotten caught up in issues around mitochondrial disease. And so they've got a couple of days worth of sessions for patients and families dealing with those mitochondrial diseases, and they have the experts who are there for their scientific sessions leading some of them, and then some of them are social workers and genetic counselors, et cetera. So there's 2 days of that going on. That's the UMDF patient conference. Then separate but together, sort of, we have our LHON conference, and that's generally been about 100 people plus minus for the last few years, little above, somewhere between like 90 to 120 for the last few years. And then in our LHON only room, like I said, there's about 100 people talking about all the issues around LHON. And within that 100 people, we generally have like 30 or 40 people who are affected. So like people said, a lot of people go their whole lives never meeting another individual affected by LHON. Here you've got 30 or 40 in one room, and then you've got another 60 or 70 or so people who are carriers, loved ones, people who aren't the same as affected, but they understand it from that perspective. So you've got dads talking to dads, you've got spouses talking to spouses, as well as affected talking to affected. I mean, you've got all kinds of connections going on during the breaks, before and after meals, et cetera. It's super interesting.
And what is, beyond the hotel cost, what is the cost of attending it?
So there's a registration fee, and it's as low as we can make it to make it break even for what the hotel charges us for the meals. So, and the UMDF sets that price, so I can't swear to you what it's going to be. It's going to come up in the next few weeks, and then we'll have the number for sure. And so there's a couple of different ways they'll price it based on whether you come to their full conference or just to the LHON one. So because theirs is a two-day meeting with a banquet, and then ours is a one-day with just like a lunch and some snacks. So so that's why I'm trying to say you've got choices. So the last year, the full cost for the UMDF meeting was $225, and I think the full cost of ours was like $85, something like that. And then last year we got sponsors to create an early bird discount. And so as long as you signed up by a certain date, it was half price. So
okay.
I think it was last year under $50
45.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was like 45 or something, 47 or something to do the UMD for the LHON conference. And then if you did the full UMDF thing, it was like 125. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do, or that's why we're doing it sort of two ways. You can keep it under 50 for the registration fee and do just the LHON thing, and that's as much as we've always done. But last year we had maybe, I don't know, 10 people that stayed for the full UMDS conference, and it was really nice because there was more time. And, you know, the sessions were a little bit less intense because they related, but not as intensely as the LHON one did. So if you can afford, like, 125, you get, you know, 3.5 days plus a banquet, and, you know, more networking, more time hanging around with people, talking about what you've absorbed. So that's why there's two different ways to do it.
Because we're already starting to sizzle into this and I haven't done it yet, I'm going to go ahead with that fantastic information on the end of the call. Go ahead and stop the recording now. This does not have to be the end of the call for anyone, but since some people are trailing off, I want to go ahead and stop the recording in case there are others who would like to introduce themselves after the recording is stopped. And please hold.